Hello and welcome to the Girl Fuel Podcast. My name is Haley. I'm a registered dietitian and nutrition coach here to help you along your health and fitness journey by providing evidence and experience-based knowledge, and as always, full transparency. Solo episode today. This is one that I've been wanting to talk to you about for a really long time, and it's my journey to overcoming insomnia and caffeine addiction. So we're gonna kind of go way back, and you're gonna get to know me a lot in this episode. So I definitely appreciate you hanging out with me and listening to me get kind of vulnerable with you here. So I'm gonna tell you a little bit more about, my fitness journey as a whole, because a lot of the reason why I ended up having insomnia, or at least to a degree, part of it is definitely genetic, just because there's a lot of, sleep issues in my family, a lot of issues with mental health in my family. And these are things that, I've struggled with for a lot of my adult life personally, and kind of what that looks like. So, insomnia, what is insomnia? Most people know insomnia as, the inability to sleep. And I think it looks different for everybody, but it's a common sleep disorder where, you may have trouble falling asleep, you may have trouble staying asleep, or just getting good quality sleep in general. Like, you may sleep pretty well, but still feel unrested the next day. You may feel sleepy during the day. It can also be linked to, a lot of lifestyle factors. And that's really what I'm going to talk to you about today. I'm going to keep it super real with you because I know that I caused myself to have insomnia. So I'm going to take you way back to my college days. I started college in 2013, but even before that, my parents said that I hated sleeping, which is the opposite now. I freaking love sleeping. So to kind of give you a sneak peek, I went from sleeping like 3 to 5 hours a night for literally years, maybe at least 5 years, to now sleeping 8 to 10 hours without any medication or supplementation, really. So let me kind of talk about what that looks like and how I prioritize the health of my sleep now, because if there's one thing that I prioritize like a freaking psychopath, it is my sleep. And hopefully this episode helps you learn how you can do that as well. So I always struggled with sleep. Apparently, as a kid, I hated sleeping. I'd sleep for a few hours and then I'd scream because I didn't want to be asleep anymore. When I started growing up, like even in high school, I was just really, really sensitive with my sleep. So I needed it to be dead quiet. If my dad had the TV too loud, I would throw a fit. If the car outside started honking, if the dog was barking, like I couldn't sleep through anything. And very early on, I had what I now realize was a nervous system reaction to just the thought of sleep. It made me very anxious and stressed to think about not being able to sleep. So I'm not sure if you can also relate to this, whether it's with sleep or anything else, but like what I mean by like the nervous system reaction, and this is something that carried on into college, into my early 20s, and was like the biggest issue, I would say. It would either start when I laid in bed to go to sleep, or even before that, when I was thinking about, okay, it's almost bedtime, where, my chest would tighten, my body would just feel like I was on red alert, high alert. I would be very, very awake. And the opposite of sleepy, more or less. So my nervous system was just on the fritz. And as I got older, I realized a lot of this, was an issue in combination with my addiction to caffeine and just feeling like on all the time. I felt like I always had to be stimulated. I felt like if I wasn't caffeinated, then I was blah, I wasn't energized enough. And this mostly, the caffeine started in college. So my first couple of years of college were very challenging. I only had one sibling. I had a little brother growing up, but I think my parents did a really good job at keeping the house super quiet. And I do think that's part of why I still am, but mostly was a really sensitive sleeper. So that's something that I'm thinking about. I'm like, if I have a kid, I'm gonna like do the freaking dishes. I'm gonna vacuum the floor while they're sleeping. I'm gonna throw a dance party so that way they won't be as sensitive as me. But anyway, so I got to college living in a dorm after living in a very quiet house. And oh my God, was it a shit show? I hated it. I almost left. My first year of college, I was like, I don't know if I can do this. It's so loud. There are people banging on my door all the time. And I loved my friends. I loved my roommate. But even then, I was a 20, how old are you when you go to college? 18, 19. I was a 19-year-old grandma. I was in bed at 8, 9 o'clock because I grew up figure skating and I was on the ice at 6, 7 o'clock for years. So I never really was a night owl, except for if I was like talking to my friend on the phone, So When I got to college, that was a big stress for me because I would get woken up when people would bang on my door at 10 p.m., which is a fair, it's a normal time to hang out, I guess, when you're in college. And I got used to it. But so I would be afraid to go to sleep. And I started sleeping with earplugs on, which I still do to this day. If you are a sensitive sleeper, that is honestly the biggest game changer for me. And I get a lot of people asking this. It doesn't block out noise enough to where I wouldn't hear an emergency. Like my cat Vincent, he has asthma. If he coughs in the middle of the night, I hear it. You know, if somebody was to drop something in the kitchen or yell, I would hear it. So that's where in college I started sleeping with earplugs on. But then that stress just started to where I was like, okay, you know, I'm so tired. I'm gonna go to sleep. It's 8, it's 9, it's 10, it's 11 even, because you're studying. You know, my sleep schedule got all erratic at that point. And I was nervous. Is somebody gonna bang on the door? Is somebody gonna be drunk screaming down the hallway? And that's kind of where it started. I was just started getting stressed about not being able to fall asleep, which obviously doesn't help you fall asleep. So that's when that nervous system issue kind of started. And then as the years of college went on, it just got worse and worse, partially because of my own lifestyle. You know, I was staying up late studying, I was out partying, and partially because I started drinking a lot of caffeine. It was just kind of the thing to do in college. If you went to college, I'm sure you know that. Like every 10 feet in a college town, there's a coffee shop, there's an Aroma Joe's, or at least that's what we had in New Hampshire. And at Aroma Joe's and the Starbucks, they would have these like sugar-free flavorings, and I'd get a red sugar-free Red Bull. And oh my God, like I used to drink at least 1,000 milligrams of caffeine per day. So pair, you know, the irregular sleep schedule, the people waking me up at all hours, and that much caffeine, my body was just on overdrive. Not to mention during this time, this is when I also started my fitness journey. Like really, I started working out at a young age, partially through figure skating, when I was like 13, 14, maybe even younger. And then, you know, doing elliptical cardio at the gym. My dad went to the gym growing up, so I always like knew I wanted to do that, but it wasn't until like I started studying nutrition and learning about, oh wow, like I can manipulate so many things, that I kind of went crazy with it, right? So in addition to all the lifestyle stuff we've already talked about, the caffeine issues, I was also starting to learn how to diet for the first time. I was always like the more overweight friend, the chunkier friend. I was never the one that was like good at dancing or making up dances or being cute and coordinated. So I was always pretty self-conscious about my body, not to mention just some like in-house family stuff that breeded that. And I'm sure, you know, some of you can relate to that growing up with maybe a mom that talked about their weight a lot. My dad was very into the gym and ate clean, right? So I definitely, you know, as a child had, I don't know if I'd call it binge eating, but I overate a lot as a child just because I don't know exactly why, but just because of the way that my lifestyle was, you know, the way that food was talked about. So I definitely, you know, since have learned a lot, and don't view food that way at all. But when I got to college, it was the first time I really had control over my diet, over what I was allowed to eat or wanted to eat. And dining halls at I went to the University of New Hampshire. The dining halls were freaking fantastic. Like I still miss that dining hall to this day, and it's been 10 years since I've been out of college. We were like top 10 dining hall in the country at the time. So I could eat whatever I wanted. So freshman year, I started, you know, dabbling and tracking my macros because, you know, I took basic classes of nutrition, and then we took classes learning about macronutrients. I don't remember. I think it was called, oh gosh, I don't know what the class was called, but we started learning about macronutrients. I was in a sports nutrition track, so we started learning about, you know, fueling your workouts and the importance of eating protein. So my sophomore year is when I really like got involved in it, and I was tracking, and I was naturally way under eating because I don't know if you've been there, but when you first enter your info in MyFitnessPal, your height, weight, and your goal to lose weight, especially as somebody that is 5 feet tall, it's like, oh yeah, you only need 1,000 calories per day. And I stupidly, silly, in a silly way, believed that, right? So we pair, you know, erratic sleep schedules, crazy environment, alcohol intake, excessive ca amounts of caffeine, and chronically under eating and over exercising. I figure skated my freshman and sophomore year very competitively, so it wasn't a big issue then. But once I stopped skating, shortly in, I think in the beginning of my junior year, I fell in love with the gym. So, you know, my love for fitness and nutrition, it did get borderline disordered. I don't really consider myself to have had an eating disorder, more so disordered eating, because I did struggle with a lot of bingey overeating in my childhood. And then into college, I would severely restrict and then binge eat and maybe even binge drink sometimes. But Needless to say, all of these things made my stress on my nervous system a lot worse. And how this kind of translates into me helping clients overcome insomnia now is one of the most common reasons that women especially struggle with sleep is because they're not eating enough. Why don't women eat enough? Because we're never taught how to eat enough. Nobody teaches us this. Even as somebody that studied nutrition, I was never really taught how much I needed to eat for my body. This is a side tangent, but if I ever retire from coaching or get to a place where I can have many, many projects going on at a time, I want to go back into the school system and teach kids how to fuel their damn bodies because I'm sick of this shit. But anyway, I digress. So I learned how to lose weight. I was training 7 days a week. I was running, 3 to 5+ miles every other day, going to the gym every morning at 5 a.m., mainly because I couldn't freaking sleep, right? So what started to happen around my senior year, this is when it was the absolute worst. And based on, therapy and all of that, I do have some sleep-related PTSD from that year of college. Part of it was my living environment, living in the party house. It was so fun. I love my friends so much, but it was loud. It was loud. It was a lot. There was a lot of partying until 4 or 5 in the morning. And I was the girl that the bar would close at 1 and I'd peace out and dive into my bed. I didn't go out and get pizza. I didn't go to another party. I was like, I'm out of here. I'm going to sleep. But that was not the case for many people. So a lot of times, sleeping for me was just stressful. The thought of going to bed made me want to cry all the freaking time. I hated it. Part of me hated being alone. Part of me hated the thought of, oh, I'm going to get woken up. So what that resulted in, mainly my senior year, was the overuse and quite literally the abuse of over-the-counter sleeping medications. I oftentimes would fall asleep okay, usually thanks to taking things like Advil PM, which is like the worst thing you could ever take because NSAIDs are freaking horrible for your gut. So, I'm able to think full circle why I've had so many gut issues over the last couple of years because of the way that I treated my body because I didn't know, right? So, Advil PM, NyQuil, ZQuil, what are the other ones? I'm trying to even think. I would order supplements on the internet, anything that would say, better sleep, lower cortisol, anti-anxiety, all these things. And I would fall asleep, but without fail, I would maybe be asleep for 3 or 4 hours before waking up at 2, 3 a.m. and being unable to go back to sleep. And that continued all through my senior year. And even after, moving out of that college environment, living with adult roommates, we were all very mature, we were all very quiet, and then living on my own, I, for at least 4 years, slept, 3 to 5 hours because I'd go to sleep super early. Because through college, I worked as a personal trainer at the school gym, at an outside gym where I also did work with nutrition. But once I graduated, I decided to take time off before going to grad school and before going to my internship. And I went full time at a gym that was in New Hampshire, not far from where I was living. And I loved it so much, but the hours were insane. So I had to be at the gym at 4 in the morning some days. And then I was there until seven at night some nights. So my life became kind of just a vicious cycle of coming home at 7, going to bed at 8, waking up because I couldn't sleep because of my anxiety, because of my high cortisol, because of my nervous system between 2, 3 a.m., stirring, rolling around, sometimes freaking crying because all I wanted was to go back to sleep. I'd lay on the floor, I'd lay on the couch, I'd lay on my bed, and eventually getting up because I either couldn't sleep or had to go to work. Pair that with, copious amounts of caffeine because I probably wouldn't have survived without it. So I wasn't able to nap. And it was just kind of a vicious cycle for years. And I didn't really think anything was wrong, which is the crazy part. Looking back, I'm like, that's not okay. You were not okay. But looking back, I always had an excuse, right? And I feel like this is the case for a lot of us when we have irregular stool or we don't sleep well. For me, I was like, I'm just stressed. I personal train. I was in contest prep for a couple years after college. So I was like, it makes sense that I don't sleep well. I'm just not a good sleeper. I rely on medication and this is just my life. But at a certain point, my body said no, which is usually what happens to a lot of us. Eventually, we deal with these issues, we brush them off, we continue trying to live our lives and working towards our goals. And eventually our body says, hey, screw you. That's not going to work anymore. So After I was done competing in 2019, I just really didn't recover from that. I had a very, very hard time gaining weight despite eating a lot of food. My sleep was still not happening. My anxiety was at an all-time high. I was just honestly a complete mess. But in order to cope with that, I was still drinking copious amounts of caffeine. Like, let me give you a picture of what my caffeine intake looked like. It was probably a little bit worse while I was in college because the access was there, but when I was personal training after college, I'd wake up at, 4 or 5 a.m. whenever I decided I couldn't sleep anymore and get up. And I would brew a pot of coffee at home. I would probably drink the entire pot or bring it to the gym with me while I trained people. I was pretty good about eating breakfast with my coffee. I used to pack like a smoothie when I was training people or eat some yogurt before. But then, I'd come home, be like, man, I'm so tired. I want a nap. Maybe I'd try to nap, fail, almost always fail. And when I was personal training, or even when I was in school, I'd have a few hours of break. So I would go to a coffee shop, I'd get a large cold brew, and I would drink it all. And then I would be normal. I'd feel better because I was caffeinated. But then, 2, 3 p.m. rolls around, crash, like utter misery, quite honestly. I'd be laying on the couch, like, I have so much to do. I can't even form a thought. There's nothing going on up there. There's no brain cells, but I can't sleep because I'm cracked the hell out on caffeine. And that was the way I liked it. I liked being cracked out. I liked feeling stimulated, which I think a lot of you can probably relate to, because I talked to some of you on Instagram about, liking that feeling. But then, I'd go back to work, go back to class, teach another boot camp, whatever it was, and then it'd be time to go to sleep. And at a certain point, I discovered that smoking marijuana or THC was the only thing that would help me sleep. And I still smoke to this day. My clients know this. My friends know this. It's not something I do every day anymore because I don't rely on it. But for years, this was the only thing that helped me sleep. And I don't recommend this. I don't recommend it. I think THC has its place. There are clients that I talk about it very openly with, but it was a band-aid. It was a band-aid, right? So that would help me fall asleep. But then again, that 2, 3 a.m. would roll around. Sometimes I would even have to have another caffeinated item. I would keep energy drinks at home, which I don't really do anymore. And I would drink half of one of those before going into the gym at 4 p.m., which is like so stupid. Like, why did I do that? And then obviously I couldn't sleep from there. So when I got to the point of, I was sick of my shit. That wasn't for literally, gosh, I started having sleep issues like legitimately in 2015. That wasn't until 2019, 2018, 2019, when I went away to grad school. Now, towards the end of my time in New England, I was personal training and I had started my online business at the end of 2017. Now, early 2018, I was also in contest prep. So there were a lot of moving parts. There was a lot of stress, and I was convinced I needed caffeine to be able to take on all of that. And mind you, now I drink maybe half a cup of coffee a day through like half cap that I brew at home, and I run a business. So needless to say, I'm very glad that I figured it out. But anyway, after I was done competing in New Hampshire, I had actually gotten into grad school at FSU. I kind of applied on a whim. I didn't really think I'd get in, and I did. And I was like super excited, but obviously that twist turned my life upside down. I moved back to Rhode Island with my dad for a few months, and this is when I kind of knew that I had an issue because I didn't have to hustle as much anymore, and I still like couldn't sleep or really do anything. So I was only working online at that point. I had my business. I had a pretty decent client roster at the time. And I was like recovering from contest prep. So food was high. I should have been able to sleep. Caffeine was starting to come down because I didn't have a reason to be caffeinated anymore, but I still couldn't. My nervous system was just that fucked. Excuse my language. We swear here. But so if you're at a point where you're like, I don't drink caffeine anymore, I eat healthy, I eat enough, I do all these things, why can't I sleep? Why do I still feel like garbage? Your nervous system is likely just still on high alert. If you feel that on edge feeling, you're irritable, you snap easily, you want to cry all the time, you have trouble maintaining energy through the day, you feel like you need caffeine. It's very possible that long-term stress resulted in that that nervous system issue, like it did for me. So when I got to grad school, it was like a fresh start. I didn't know anybody. I was in a new state, new grad program, super excited, but I was also sick of my shit. I was like, all right, in order to actually succeed in grad school and be able to do research, be able to continue coaching clients. And by this time, I was working for an online coaching company and also, participating in my classes, the gym, all of that. I was like, I need to fix this. So I had really good insurance at the time, and the doctors at FSU, I heard they were really good, and they were amazing. So I finally went to the doctor, because I didn't want to growing up, just because I think I didn't know that that was something you go to the doctor for. And they diagnosed me with anxiety. And at first, I was like, "No, I'm not anxious," because I didn't really. I don't even now. Like I admit I have anxiety, and there's nothing wrong with that. But I rarely feel anxious. It's more often than not, it's the other symptoms of anxiety that I struggle with, in addition to like ADHD, so trouble focusing for long periods of time, getting caught in like thought loops where you think of the worst case scenario, where you just stress yourself out of doing things, which is very much better now. But they were like, "You have anxiety," and I was so against it. I was like, "No, it's such a stigma about it. It wasn't really talked about in my childhood or really before that." But I was like, all right, whatever. If you think this will help me sleep, I'm gonna take whatever you give me. So they gave me a sedative. They gave me, I think it was hydroxyzine, which literally is just like a high dose antihistamine, which now I realize is horrible for you. And it didn't help. It did nothing. I still didn't sleep. I just felt groggy. So then they put me on an SSRI, which did help. So basically, why that likely helped, well, obviously anxiety, but also, my serotonin was probably freaking tapped out. Dopamine was super low from all of the stress I had put my body under over the years. Low dopamine is really common with ADHD. Dopamine is our neurotransmitter that helps us focus, it helps us stay motivated. Serotonin is another neurotransmitter that's actually highly regulated in our GI tract. So serotonin is what we think about when we think about anxiety, because a lot of times it's that chemical that carries messages between the nerve cells in your brain throughout your body. And it plays a key role in pretty much a lot of different functions, but mainly, mood, sleep, and digestion. So it made perfect sense why they put me on it, and it helped. It worked. For the first time in almost a decade, I fucking slept, and it was fantastic. But the caffeine, that was still an issue. So, and I'm gonna try not to ramble too much longer. So during that whole time, we can assume, because I didn't test during that time, so I didn't know to test until 2019-ish. I had high cortisol, sky high cortisol. My stress hormones were through the roof, my adrenaline was through the roof, and my neurotransmitters were all wacky. During this time, I also didn't have a period. I was on birth control and then came off of it and just didn't get my period back. But again, at the time, I didn't think much of it because I didn't know. So my body was just pretty mad overall, body mad, as I like to say. But so once I started sleeping again, I kind of knew. I was like, hey, there are other things that I can do to support this. And that's when, obviously, I had been coaching mainly just like fat loss, body transformation stuff. And 2019, 2020 is when I started getting into more of like the functional health space, more getting a true understanding of like the root causes, the whys behind things. And I started researching anxiety and ADHD, because those are the two things that I had finally been diagnosed with. And ADHD made a lot of sense because I had a lot of trouble in like grade school. I was in like the special reading group. I can't do math for shit. I'm low-key dyslexic. So a lot of eyes were opened during that process, but I knew I had to reduce my caffeine intake. But that didn't happen for a while through grad school. When I was in the research lab, a lot of the other grad and PhD students had a very also unhealthy relationship with caffeine. So we would all be drinking energy drinks. We'd bring different ones in to try. They were always bangs. So my caffeine obsession continued, but luckily, thanks to the medication and still THC, I was able to sleep. I didn't really overcome my caffeine addiction until, like I mentioned earlier, my body said no and my cortisol took a giant shit, right? So, some symptoms of high cortisol I've already kind of talked about, like that overall feeling of nervous system stimulation, getting on edge easily, anxiety. A lot of times we'll also have constipation, maybe delayed muscle recovery, because when cortisol is dysregulated, our inflammatory process can't happen properly. And what happens a lot of times is after, for a lot of people, years of the adrenal dumping cortisol, your sex hormones get low, which happened to me. My progesterone was like a zero, so I didn't have a period for a while. But eventually your adrenals tap out and they're like, hey, I don't know what you're doing, but we can't do this anymore. We can't keep producing so much cortisol. Same with everything else, adrenaline. Your body just is like, nope, we're done. Sorry. And then that's when I actually, started getting into testing, and was able to find out that my cortisol was low. This was mainly through my dietetic internship, which was super fun. So at that time, I was using a lot of caffeine. I was on a stimulant medication for my ADHD, and my adrenals were just screaming like, hey, none of this is going to help. So if you're somebody that, you feel like maybe you take Adderall or you use caffeine to try to get energy, but after taking it, you either crash immediately or you kind of like fizzle and burn where you're okay for a while, but then you crash and you feel like total shit. It's very possible that your body's like, hey, can you stop? And that's when I kind of finally started listening to my body and was like, all right, like none of this is helping. Something might actually be wrong. So I started digging into, my health even more. This was when kind of like the first peak of functional health stuff started back in, I guess you could say 2020, 2021. And this is when I realized that the reason why I didn't sleep for years and the reason why I relied on caffeine was because of my hormones, not necessarily because I had insomnia. Well, I did have insomnia, but why? Whenever you get a diagnosis, I encourage you to ask why, because these are things that I wish I did sooner, instead of relying on medications or something of that nature. But you gotta ask why. So I hope, hearing my journey helps you see, well, like, no fucking wonder you don't sleep. You didn't sleep and you needed caffeine to exist. So, maybe you're somebody that your sleep is decent, but you still like that high feeling of being caffeinated or stimulated. The biggest thing that, at least for me, I feel like I struggled with that at that time was lack of trust with my body. I didn't trust that my body could do it on its own. And I honestly just didn't want to find out. I didn't have the patience to say, okay, let's do a really low dose of caffeine or let's have none until we need it, right? It was just my routine. And that's a lot of it too. It's just in our routine to wake up, we have coffee, we go on to the next task, we grab an energy drink, and we're used to that. But at a certain point, you'll probably get there too, where it just doesn't help anymore. You drink the caffeine and you don't feel any different. And that's where, we might joke and be like, caffeine doesn't affect me. And it's like, yeah, it doesn't affect you because your receptors are just like, hey, fuck you, stop. Like, this is doing nothing but trying to drive cortisol and adrenaline up. So eventually, it just stopped working. It just stopped working to where I was like, okay, I need to stop drinking this. But it was hard. It took me a while to cut caffeine. And I think this is hopefully where I can at least be somewhat relatable, because I think some like fitness coaches or, functional practitioners or even influencers make it easy. And they're like, I just switched to green tea and matcha. So easy. And for a lot of us, it's not that easy at all. For me, it wasn't. I honestly had the hardest time with it. I didn't fully eliminate caffeine for very long, but the only reason I did is because I just felt like garbage literally all the time. So I hope you don't reach that point, but at a certain point, caffeine, there's a diminishing return, right? You're drinking it and yeah, it tastes really good. It tastes really good. We're not gonna deny that, but it's not helping anymore. So that's where the biggest thing, if you're struggling with, wanting to drink a lot of caffeine or relying on it, is to just swap things out in your routine, right? Because the hardest thing for a lot of people is changing their habits or changing their routines. So if you have coffee every morning, can you make it half calf? And I really like the Starbucks grounds, the Verana blend, which is like the blonde roast. That's my favorite. You can buy the bags of the decaf and the regular. And when I make my coffee pot, I'll just scoop half and half. And that is a game changer because then you only get half the caffeine. And then if you do need more, you can drink a second cup of that yummy taste without overdoing it. So that was a big place that I started. And then I love energy drinks. I still do. They just taste so good. And I don't, there's that joke about like beverage goblin. I'm a beverage goblin. Even right now, I have only three. So I have ginger tea, water, and my electrolytes. I already had a little bit of coffee this morning, but I just love the taste of those energy drinks, all of them. Currently, Ghost is my favorite. It has been for years. But again, I didn't have any self-control with it. I would drink the whole freaking can. And let me tell you probably do not need a whole energy drink that has 200 to 400 milligrams of caffeine after having morning coffee or at all, quite honestly, right? So that's where I would slowly start decreasing my intake. So if you're somebody that doesn't work from home, What I would do is not bring your energy drink with you. I would either pour it, pour like the portion that you want, maybe a third of it, maybe half of it, into a shaker cup or a coffee cup and bring it with you. So that way the rest of the can can be at home. I'll usually cover it with a bag or a cap cover or whatever and leave it. So it's just cutting things down. Another step that you could take if you're also a beverage goblin and just like the taste of it is to buy caffeine-free diet soda. And please don't come at me. I know I'm a registered dietitian and I know that this has chemicals and ingredients that aren't the best, but pick your damn battles, right? Something is going to kill me and it's not going to be consuming artificial sweeteners. There's actually no research to support that they are that dangerous at all. So a lot of times having, a small can of Diet Coke or Diet Root Beer is currently my favorite, either one that has caffeine, that's it's only going to be like 40, 50 milligrams of caffeine for that little can instead of like 200, and you get the taste, or buy the caffeine free. So you still get that. But then, okay, we start replacing, we start reducing intake. We have to find other ways to get energy, right? Because we have to remember caffeine doesn't give us energy, but you're looking for energy, right? So some things that I find really, 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 really helpful are going to be maintaining proper hydration status. And when I say hydration status, I don't just mean water. I mean electrolytes. So, and I'm not sponsored by them. I really wish that I was because I'm addicted, but Element or Elementi, however you say it, these have changed my life. I'm actually drinking some right now. They're a very high dose of sodium. They also have potassium and magnesium. Getting sufficient amounts of electrolytes are essential for pretty much every bodily process in your human body, but especially for energy metabolism. Electrolytes play key roles in fluid balance, hydration status, maintaining energy, maintaining healthy digestion, but also absorbing nutrients. So I like to start my day with my electrolytes. However, some of my girls that do struggle with like a 2, 3 p.m. crash, I like to have them use their electrolytes there. Movement. Getting gentle movement is also really helpful, especially in the sunshine. So go for a morning walk. Try to improve your circadian rhythm. That's going to help both your sleep and your need for caffeine, right? So one thing that I started doing, this is when my cortisol was tanked, but I still do it now. My cat Vincent, who's the big one, if you've been following along, he loves this. I have a happy light because a lot of times I wake up, especially now with daylight savings, and it's really dark and sad. So in order to help my body produce cortisol in the morning, which is when we want it to be producing it, I like to use morning light exposure. Ideally, you get outside within the first hour of waking and the sun's out, but that's not the case, especially if you work early or go to the gym early. So buying like a simple happy light on Amazon, they range from like $20 to expensive, like $100. Mine's cheap, can be really helpful. I just turn it on when I wake up and I'll lay with it for 10, 15 minutes, maybe more before I get out of bed. And that kind of simulates that morning sun. So that way you get that yet peak in cortisol, your awake hormones and neurotransmitters are on full alert. And it also helps your body just regulate for the rest of the day because it's like, oh, hey, it's sunny. I'm supposed to be awake right now. Let's do it. Melatonin goes down in the body, cortisol slightly goes up. And that's one natural way to gain energy. Electrolytes will also be helpful going for walks, getting movement in, even just standing up and stretching during the day. If you're at home, I like to leave my yoga mat out and I'll do some foam rolling. And even just taking work breaks, right? Especially if you're an online coach, I feel like the hustle culture is real lately. This is something I personally struggle with a lot, with falling into like, I need to work 12 hours, 14 hours in order to be successful, when really that's not true for most of us, because a lot of times doing that just drives stress up, when in reality, we want to fill our cup, and things that fill our cup give us energy. So it might be as simple as going for a walk, but it might be as simple as meeting a friend for a walk. It might be as simple as going out and seeing something new in the middle of the day, or going and changing your scenery and going to a coffee shop, right? There are a lot of different ways to gain energy outside of caffeine and to get that natural high. Your body has hormones within it that produce that for you without being caffeinated. They just need to learn how to do it again, because when we do what I did and we dose ourselves with heavy amounts of caffeine, we mess with our circadian rhythm, we cause a lot of internal stress, our hormones and neurotransmitters won't be produced properly. So yeah, we're going to feel like crap and we're going to feel down and depressed and moody and anxious. So that's where learning to work with your body, and I say this all the time, is the best thing that you can do. And I wish it was something that we were taught in school, but On the sleep piece, I feel like the three most valuable things that I changed or did, and honestly, I still do all of these very religiously. So, in order, no order, I should say, no specific order, but significantly decreasing caffeine, which we've obviously talked a lot about, increasing my calories. That was probably the biggest thing, especially when I, was under eating for so many years. That was a big driver of my nervous system dysregulation, probably my high cortisol and the inability to sleep. And this is something that I found over the years with clients as well, that sleep is a biofeedback marker that tells us a lot about how our body is functioning, right? So if you're in a calorie deficit or you're just not sure if you're eating enough, that is something to consider if you are struggling big time with sleep. So one thing that I do religiously, and a lot of my clients will do this as well, is have a bedtime snack, right? So I'll eat my dinner, usually by 6:30, sometimes now, honestly, sometimes more like 7:30. And then I'll have a snack like right before bed. And again, this isn't going to be for everybody. Like if you have acid reflux or GERD or a more severe bloating, that's probably not going to be the best for you to do if you lay down right away. But at least I would say an hour before bed, it can be really helpful to have a more carbohydrate dense snack, because not only is that going to help lower cortisol, help get you nice and sleepy, but it'll also, especially if it's more like of a complex carb that has some fiber in it, and I'll give you some examples in a second, will help with just keeping hunger, blood sugar, digestion, and everything at bay overnight. So especially my girls that I call my stress cadets, and that's not a bad thing. I'm am slash was one of those. I'm always like, yes, bedtime snack, please. Let's have something, that's fun. It can be a dessert, but also is gonna help you wind down. So my go-tos are dessert-like things. When I have banana bread that I've made on hand, that is like the best with Fairlife milk. I'm addicted to this milk, guys. Like it's so good. If you haven't tried it, definitely do it. And even if you have lactose issues, I've seen a plenty of clients who have had lactose issues, and I even drink this through my gut protocols, have no problem with it. And then sometimes I'll do like a Kids Go Macro bar or like a gluten-free cookie. I really like the Simple Mills because they're not super high in sugar. Sometimes some like dark chocolate and peanut butter, some berries with chocolate together. So good. So it doesn't necessarily have to make sense or be something super elaborate. It can be just something to hold you over and to play with, especially, if you're someone that craves having something sweet after dinner, like I always do. I have to have something sweet. So I've always kept that in consideration and used it as something that's very helpful now for my routine. So I definitely encourage you to try that. And if you do, let me know how it goes. And then the last thing is just overall routines, bedtime routine, morning routine. They are so important, right? And I've talked about this before, but it doesn't have to be some like 16-step influencer-y routine where you meditate and you journal and you do all these self-help things, right? It does not have to be that at all. Like mine is so simple, and it just gets me prepared for bed or for the day, but especially for sleep. So it starts for me, and this is how I help my clients, build these routines as well. It's something that I ask in my onboarding process. And if you're a coach who's listening to this, you might want to start doing this as well. But I'll ask specifically, what is your morning routine? And then I'll be like, for example, I wake up at this time, I drink water, I go to the gym at this time. So that gives me a better idea of, is somebody eating breakfast before the gym? Are they waking up and throwing coffee right in their face? Which also prolonging putting that off for at least 60 minutes, if not 90, can also help with wakefulness in the morning. But back to nighttime, I have a hard cutoff for work. And this is something I talk to my mentorship clients about and my nutrition clients, right? So my cutoff ideally is like 7. Like if I'm doing something that is stimulating for my brain past that, even though sometimes I want to and am very capable of doing so mentally at that time, my brain will not shut off. It will not come out of work mode no matter what I do. Even if I do the normal wind down routine. So my cutoff is 7, and I've been using an app called AppBlock to block like Instagram and Facebook on my phone. I think that starts for me at 8, and I go to bed usually at 9. So that's a big thing, is going to be finding your sweet spot with screen time. And if you're like, oh yeah, I'm fine, I scroll to fall asleep and that doesn't hurt me, I challenge you to ask yourself how your sleep really is. Like, how easily do you wake up? How sensitive are you to, to little noises in the night, or just waking up multiple times to pee, waking up and feeling wired and having trouble going back to sleep, right? So there are a lot of signs that, you know, something isn't beneficial, or that, you know, your body is a little bit more stressed than it may feel. And sleep is a big, big telltale sign for that. So find your cutoff with technology, with screens, with work, with things that are stimulating to your brain, right? And that can also include TV shows. I love watching TV. Like, I don't even care that I'm admitting this, because everybody knows this. I am not a huge reader. I do like to read, but every night, for as long as I can remember, I have watched some sort of TV, and it makes me so happy, and it's part of my routine. So sometimes, you know, watching like a horror movie before bed is not the best, the best idea. But one recommendation, if you're also like me and you're like, no, I love watching TV, if you're someone that games, I have a lot of my clients that are gamers, they also have to set cutoffs because that is stimulating. But if you're someone that's watching TV, you know, first tip is make sure it's not right in your face. So if you're watching, you're laying in bed or on the couch using your laptop as your TV screen, get it out of your face, because even if you have night shift on, it is still probably not helping. I actually stopped using my laptop at night to watch shows because of that. And I noticed a big difference. And as you build awareness, you'll notice these little things and can keep improving too. So, you know, if you have a TV, do that. If not, put your laptop far away from your face, and then blue light blocking glasses. Blue light blocking glasses are something I have used religiously for as long as my sleep has been fixed. And I swear by them. My boyfriend also likes them. I mean, there's science behind them, right? Blocking out that stimulating light is great for circadian rhythms. It's great for your body's natural melatonin production, which before bed, that's what we want. And melatonin and cortisol actually are inverse. So if cortisol is high, melatonin is typically low, and vice versa. If melatonin is rising, cortisol should be falling. So that way your body is able to rest. So, so making sure that you're doing things to support your circadian rhythm in your routine. Again, it doesn't have to be elaborate. So, you know, I'll finish work, I'll put some music on, make dinner with my boyfriend, or, you know, while he's on his way home. And then sometimes I'll play music in the kitchen, because that helps me kind of like start unwinding for the day. I also enjoy this part of my evening routine. Like, I don't love cooking throughout the day, so, you know, meal prep, but at the end of the day, I look forward to this mainly because of the music. I know that for the first time in the day, I'm done. I can play my music. I can dance around the kitchen, maybe use a little bit of THC if I want to, and enjoy that cooking time, catch up with Ed for the day, my boyfriend, and then, you know, we'll eat our dinner, when we do often eat watching TV. And I think I'm definitely probably an unpopular opinion on this. You'll hear a lot of people in the industry be like, don't eat distracted. And I think that that is true for some people, right? Like, here are kind of my thoughts there. And now we're just going off on a side tangent, but that's okay. That's what we're here for. This is probably going to be the longest episode I've recorded in a while, but that's fine. So with, you know, should you be watching TV while you're eating dinner? Should I be distracted while I'm eating dinner? There are, I think, a couple camps that you can fall in. You know, if you're somebody that, if you notice when you're eating dinner, watching something, you just like aren't present with your food at all, you wolf it down, and then you're completely unsatisfied after. And same goes if you're working while eating. It can be very, very hard to register the satisfaction, not only from like a mental standpoint, but from a physiological standpoint, when you are eating in a distracted state, right? So that's where slowing down and giving yourself, you know, the time to eat without major distractions can be helpful. If you feel like you need some noise, you can do music. I find that less distracting than TV. But, you know, if you are somebody that struggles with maybe a lower appetite, or, you know, you're having trouble getting your food in, or you're feeling very, very, you know, very, very maybe more stressed about the food specifically, and you don't want to be overthinking it, that's where, or if you just have a good grasp on like, hey, I can still enjoy my food while I'm eating. And that's where I'm at. Like, I think my food's better when I'm watching TV. I don't know why, just like, maybe it's the ADHD in me. I need multiple stimulus, but you get the idea. So it's all about knowing yourself there. But you know, taking that time to not be eating dinner while I'm working, even though that could be very well what I do, but taking time to eat dinner, and then after we're, you know, done with dinner, we've cleaned up a little bit, all the lights go off. So not turning on overhead lights an hour and a half, ideally, to an hour before bed is going to be a game changer. Again, similar to the blue light blocking glasses, that melatonin production aligning with that circadian rhythm, helping your body get tired for the night. And then from there, you know, doing things that actually make you sleepy. Again, if you're hopping up and down on the couch watching, a terrifying show until 10 minutes before bed, it's going to be very hard to sleep. If you're doom scrolling on your phone and your brain is like on overdrive stimulated, it's going to be very hard to fall asleep, especially, if you're a coach and you're on social media or you're, writing down content, which I get, we all get ideas at kind of the worst times. Like I wake up all the time at 1 in the morning. I'm just like, I have to write this down immediately. So if that's also you, pen and paper next to your bed, game changer. Love that as well. So multiple little tips here. But long story short, like find a routine that either gets you ready for your day without stress or helps you unwind from your day without stress. To me, it doesn't have to be any more complicated than that. But, reining that in over the last couple of years has probably been the best thing for my sleep ever. And I'm finally at a place where I can still sleep if I don't do that routine. I just have to do the end of it, right? So for me, like this, for example, I was at a conference in Dallas and we were out late, either hanging out together or we went out a couple of nights for dinner and it was just super late because it was a big group and it was fine, or we were just having fun and it was just life. Like life happens, right? Your bedtime routine shouldn't dictate how you live your life, at least not all the time. So what I know I need to do when I get home is, put my blue light blocking glasses on and do something quiet. So if I don't need to eat, I'll make some tea or my magnesium calm powder. And then I will watch a little bit of TV. Often that at that point I'm in bed on my laptop and again screens far away from my face, and that helps me shut my brain off. And if you're having a really hard time, something that I've found helpful over the years is doing like a brain dump before bed, or if you're somebody that's really anxious in the morning, this can be very helpful, where if you like pen and paper, use that. I'll often do it on my phone or my computer in the Apple Notes app, and just write anything that comes to mind. Some people like to do affirmations or little prompts. I'll just write everything. So things I'm putting on my to-do list for the next day, things that are just like ad hoc that I'm like, why do I keep thinking about this, right? Like content ideas that pop out of my brain in the middle of nowhere. So I think having some of those boundaries can be very, very helpful, and having your routine and just learning as you go with what works for you, right? You'll get to a point where like, I can't drink coffee past 2. Otherwise, I'm gonna be up, right? And nobody's perfect. So don't try to be. But again, the biggest thing when it came to overcoming both things, like the insomnia, but especially the caffeine addiction, was just like calling myself out on my own bullshit and being like, hey, this isn't helpful. It's not helpful anymore. I don't feel good, and it's not normal to feel this way, right? It's not normal to need to sleep in the middle of the day. Unless, of course, you're working crazy hours and that's just when you sleep. But it's not normal to feel like you're gonna die if you don't have caffeine. It's not normal to have pounding headaches without caffeine or to, sleep 3 hours a night. So the biggest thing is just giving yourself grace and meeting yourself where you're at and starting slow. I know like the cold turkey and switching over to bone broth and green tea and matcha, it sounds super fun and trendy, but it isn't realistic, I think, for a lot of us. Especially if you do consume high doses of caffeine, you will likely have withdrawal symptoms that way. So I like to wean yourself down to the minimum effective dose. There are very few occasions where I'll suggest a client completely stop caffeine. Those cases may include, just overall, like their stress bucket's overflowing and there's not a lot we can do to control it. Like if they're having life or family issues and their mental health just isn't in the best place, caffeine is often one of those things that we can remove from the stress bucket. Maybe if there's a gut issue and caffeine is exacerbating that, like that caffeine can cause loose stool or diarrhea. So, if you're someone that relies on coffee to poop, that's a whole nother conversation that we need to have. But those are some situations where I will remove it. But even then, tea is going to be really helpful. Tea also helped me a lot. I used a lot of different like flavored herbal teas, and herbal doesn't have caffeine. Like I like apple cinnamon or raspberry leaf. Not only do they have medicinal benefits, but they also just taste sweeter and more similar to coffee than, like, in my opinion, a green or a ginger. So, accepting, hey, I'm not going to feel like I'm cracked out all the time, and that's normal. It's normal to feel like shit sometimes. My body is human, and humans aren't always at 100%. And that was the hardest thing for me to learn. I still struggle with that. I do. And it's something that I remind myself of and I remind my clients of, especially my ladies, where we have those cyclical changes throughout our menstrual cycle, where some weeks we feel on top of the world and some weeks we want to hide and lay in bed all day, right? And it's just kind of learning how to work with your body, but having accountability can be helpful. So that's where, you know, coaching or even just having an accountability buddy, your spouse, your friend, your mom, to help you with these habits will go a long way. But the biggest thing I think is keep the routines that do serve you and just make simple swaps. From there, constantly remind yourself. I don't care how you do it, whether you write it down, you say it out loud, you think it, you take extra space away from that environment that makes you want to caffeinate, get outside. But remind yourself that it's okay to have low energy. It's okay to have breaks in the day where you rest your eyes. It's okay to go outside for a walk instead of being glued to your computer. And it's okay to drink things that aren't energy drinks as a replacement, even if they have artificial sweeteners, right? So I hope that this is helpful. And you know, now I've gotten to a point, and it took me again a very long time, as I'm sure you've gathered, to get here to where I don't need caffeine anymore. I can go a day without coffee. I rarely do that because I love the taste of coffee. But sometimes, you know, if I sleep poorly for whatever reason, I'm out late, I will skip coffee. If I trained really hard and my nervous system is just on the fritz, I'll skip it. But a big thing that I'll recommend again is just working with where you're at now. And then starting slowly, because just like any change for your health, your nutrition, your fitness, going 0 to 100 or making a total 180 rarely works. It's rarely sustainable. So that's where, you know, a big thing that I'm going to suggest is meeting yourself where you're at and trying to get to maybe the root cause of, well, why is your nervous system like this? Why do you feel like you need to rely on caffeine? Why does sleep stress you out? And what are some things that you can do to calm that response down? So I'll leave you with this. These are some things that while I was struggling with insomnia did help, and they do still help now. Because honestly, it wasn't until this last year that my sleep is finally in a place, knock on some wood, because I want to sleep tonight, that I don't take anything to go to sleep. Transparently, I am still on an SSRI, and that works for me right now. But I no longer rely on things like melatonin, excessive amounts of calming herbs like ashwagandha. I don't take any additional, you know, 5-HTP every night anyway. But I will use them situationally, right? So when you're healing your relationship with sleep, some of these more natural compounds can be really helpful when used correctly and match with what your body's currently doing. So making sure that you understand, you know, what's going on in your body is going to be really helpful. And just being honest with yourself about, hey, like, is this really an issue? And do I need help to get to the solution? Because take it from me, someone that does this for a living, I need help, and that's okay. So anyway, that is how I overcame insomnia and caffeine addiction. I now sleep very beautifully. A lot of it, again, was calling myself out of my bullshit. A lot of it was also learning how to regulate my nervous system. Part of it came from reducing caffeine. You know, just that alone, I was less on edge. I was less jittery, less anxious, but also utilizing tools like guided breathing, deep breathing, especially before bed. One thing that used to help me a lot when I was in deep with it, when I would have those intrusive thoughts when I was laying there, was instead of letting myself think, oh my God, am I going to fall asleep? Okay, it's this time. I only have this many hours to sleep. If I fall asleep right now, I would do things like count backwards from 30 while monitoring my breathing. I would count my breaths. I would play a meditation on Spotify. I would play white noise. I would get out of bed. If you can't sleep, get out of bed. Get out of bed, go lay on your couch for a little while, make some tea, pet your cat, and then wait until you're really sleepy again. And then, you know, utilizing things like melatonin and ashwagandha, but reminding yourself that, you know, there's a reason that you need those and they may not be a long-term solution. But remember that it's okay to have low energy. It's okay to have days where you feel like dog shit and you do the bare minimum because you're a human and humans are not energizer bunnies. Humans are meant to sleep. Humans are meant to ebb and flow, especially as women. And I hope that this is helpful. And if you're struggling with any point of your journey with your sleep, with your stress, with your caffeine addiction, I am an open book. My DMs are always open. So please don't hesitate to reach out. If you liked this episode or if any part of it helped you, please subscribe. Please share it on Instagram. Tag me so I know that you were here with me. Share it with a friend that might need it. And thank you so much for hanging out with me today.